Alright, so Parshas Toldos. Alright, so what we'll do today, I'd like to learn a couple of the psukim in the beginning of the Parsha. We'll start with the story of the birth of Yaakov and Esav. Familiar, I'm sure, to you. We'll go through the text, we'll have a couple of insights, then we'll discuss that as it relates to the end of the story, in which Yaakov, of course, is sent to swindle the blessings from his father Yitzchak, who is about to bless Esav instead. All right, let's work it through. Let's see what we can study a little bit. So the parsha begins on page 124. Eila told us Yitzchak ben Avraham. Avraham holidus Yitzchak. An introductory phrase. These are the offspring of Yitzchak, the son of Avraham. We're going to be describing now the progeny of Yitzchak. Yitzchak and his two sons, Avraham, begat Yitzchak, and that is how the story begins. Okay, for our purposes. Pasuk Chaf, verse 20. Yitzchak ben Arba'im shana bekachto es Rivka. So the Torah describes Yitzchak now in his marriage. Yitzchak was 40 years old when he marries his wife Rivka. Who was Rivka? Bas Bisuel ha'arami. She was the daughter of Bisuel, mi Padan Aram, from the city of from Padan Aram. And she was Achois Lavan Ha'arami. She was the sister of the Aramean Lavan. So we have a description of Yitzchak and his marriage to his wife Rivka. Now there's an obvious problem with this pasuk, which Rashi right away directs our attention to. And that is, the main theme of this pasuk seems to be describing Yitzchak and his marriage and defining for us who is his wife Rivka. Who is this character Rivka? And we describe her. She is the daughter of Bisuel. She is from the city of Padan Aram. She is the sister of Lavan. And the obvious problem is...
Well, what occurred to me, might not be what you're looking for. Usually we don't talk about the sister as somebody's parents.
Okay, we will answer that question based on what we're going to get to. We will answer that. So that's a fair question. But there's we're going to get to that. There's a simpler level of a question. When did this story take place of Yitzchak and his marriage to Rivka? As far as which parsha? Yeah, last week. Uh-huh. Right? This was last week's parsha. We were discussing last week the story of the well and the test that Eliezer had over there in order to determine. Remember, that was just last week's class, right? Mm-hmm. Am I going to have to start giving exams every week on the previous week? Don't make me do it. Last week was Eliezer. He was standing at the well. He made the exam. He had the test. As to whether or not she was going to be so kind not only to provide for him, but for his camels, and we spoke about all that last week. We know who Rivka is. Last week there was a whole story. Rivka was specifically chosen because of the place that she lived in. That was Abraham's stipulation to his servant Eliezer. You may only go back to the place from which I came, which is where he went. You may only take from my family. We were introduced to her brother Lavan. We were introduced to her father Bisuel. We know exactly who she was. It was stated several times in last week's parsha. And here you have the Torah telling us, let's tell you now about their family. These are the progeny, the offspring of Yitzchak. Let's first tell you whom he married. And it's not enough just to tell you who he married. We then go through the whole process. She was the daughter of Bisuel. She was the sister of Lavan. And she was from Padam. We know that. So Rashi's bothered by this. Rashi states as follows. Do you want to follow it inside? It's in the first column of Rashi, five lines from the bottom. Says Rashi, Achos Lavan, the sister of Lavan, V'chi adayin lo nichtov shehi bas Bisuel va'achos Lavanu mi padon aram. Don't we already know all this? Rashi asks. I know who she is, where she's from, and who her siblings and father are. Ela lehagid shvacha. This is to tell us the praise, to tell us the righteousness of Rivka. Shahayso bas rasha. She was the daughter of a wicked person. Va'achois rasha. She was the sister of a wicked person. Umekoima anshe rasha. And she was from a place of rishoyim. Velo lamda mima'asehem. And she did not learn from their ways. So says Rashi, based on the statement of the sages, you know why the Torah repeats all of this? This is all stated in her praise. She was Rivka, the righteous one who married Yitzchak. She was the daughter of a wicked person, didn't learn from him. She was the sister of a wicked person, didn't learn from him either. And she grew up in a city of wicked individuals and didn't learn from them either. So to express the magnitude of her righteousness, and in all the different ways that the Torah lists this again, telling us who she was and where she was from, all in her praise, letting us know how righteous she was.
So from whom did she learn her righteousness?
Excellent question.
Sorry, what did she say?
She asked, Myrna's asking, where did she learn her righteousness from?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what do you think? Another question.
Also, I mean, along with that question, I keep hearing, why didn't he choose a Canaanite wife for Abraham for his son? Because they were so bad and such, you know, they didn't have any good meadows at all in Canaan. Imagine how bad they were if he had to go to there to find...
Right.
And it's talking about how bad they are.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we mentioned last week. We mentioned from Rav Shamshon Rafal Hirsch that a bad ideology is much easier to correct than bad midos. So that in Canaan, where they had both the bad ideology and the bad midos, he said, I don't want that. But in where I come from, where it's possible at least to raise a child like this, but it's a good question. Where did you get it from? What do you think the answer is?
It could be genetic, I guess.
What do you mean when you say genetic? She just was
a
naturally a good person?
She was a relative.
Maybe Hashem.
No, I think it's also possible. My leaning would be towards the fact of... this class is now going to take a detour. It's a good detour. It's going to take the scenic view to get to where we want to get to. But there's a... I'll answer this. This is my approach to answer. I think it's a fair question. There's a question that the Rambam, Maimonides, asks. He doesn't really ask you this question, but I'll ask it in a way. He answers it, but I'll put it in the following question. What do you think is a better... Who is a better Jew? Which, in God's eyes, of the following two people, does God value or think is on a higher level? Is it the person who struggles with sin? The person who is tempted with it? The person who desires it? Who fights it, and after all of those struggles, after all of the fantasies, I'll be able to do this, I'll do this, he says, no, not going to do it. And he withholds himself, he refrains from doing that which he so much desires, so badly wishes he could do, but he says to himself, I know I'm not allowed to do this, and he withholds, stops himself. That's person A. Person B looks at sin and says, ugh, gross. Why would I even think of engaging in that? That's an abhorrent behavior. I don't want to be part of that. I don't even have the desire. I have no want or drive or interest in any of those things. I only desire to do that which is right. Two individuals put on your heavenly scales. Would God value... Now, this is really an unfair question because God doesn't compare people like that. But in just for the purpose of discussion, would it be more valuable... Or is it on a higher level to be the person A, who has the desires, who struggles, who wants to do all of those things, yet holds himself back? Or the person who is on such a level that he's above, he doesn't even desire that?
I think
a.
Both. No, I say A.
You say A. Why? Let's get a couple of opinions. Why do you say A? A is the person who struggled.
He's aware of the fact that... what's wrong, and he's refraining from doing it.
Okay, a fair argument. That's better than the person who doesn't even have the struggle.
Yes.
Okay, it's before I get
consciously to... Consciously willing to do the right thing.
Anyone else agree?
I do.
You agree?
Yeah, because I think, I'm not quoting it correctly, but I think in Ethics of the Fathers it says who is wise, he who has controlled his passion.
Who is strong, yeah. Who is strong,
controlled
his passion, yeah.
Okay, and the other reason is that, went out. Okay, I'll have to think of it later.
Okay, so then before we get that, so I agree with, who agrees with Lucy? You agree with Lucy?
Yeah.
Then it's better that's the testimony of strength.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, anyone hold, before we get to you, what say both? Anyone hold person B, the person who's above it all, who doesn't have the desire? Anyone hold that's on a higher spiritual plane? Nobody.
It comes naturally to him, right?
Yeah, either or. It could be that it comes naturally, or that he has brought himself to a place where he doesn't desire it.
Oh, I know the other thing. Life is a continuous spiritual struggle. So the first guy is engaged.
He's engaged in the struggle. The other one's already. He's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this is to try to find some argument for this second guy who's achieved such a level and who's, you know, he's truly able to carry on Torah with a clear head. I mean, he's able to do, you know, he doesn't have distractions.
He's not distracted by the struggle.
I mean, it's an amazing level to be at where he's able to, he's not so much struggling within his own body and his mind. He's out doing great things probably at that point. I don't think that's the common opinion. But
okay. And remind me of your name again?
Sorry.
Remind me of your name again?
Tova.
So Tova, what do you have for us? You say both.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's you have to give both of them credit. It's very hard to be when you are around, you know, bad people and everything, and be like Rivka. And on the other hand, you know, it's both. I mean, you have to give them credit, both of them.
Okay, do you want to, yeah.
I just, you know, it's sort of like comparing of Alter Shiva to from birth. And isn't there some saying about nobody stands where a Baal Teshuva?
Correct. The Gemara says that in the place where a Baal Teshuva stands, even the righteous cannot come close because they know what it's like to have had the desire, to have had the experience. So it's correct. So you want to hear a fascinating Rambam? How you know the Rambam tackles this? So I left out a piece of information in asking the question.
We didn't have to give you a chance.
So the Rambam makes the following distinction. Says the Rambam, it depends. There are two types of prohibitions, two types of sins on the books. We have the types which he calls seichel, the type which are